It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon and welcome to the broadcast. Get used to it, folks. The heat is sticking around for a while. Meteorologist Kevin Williams.
That old air that you wear deal, that human Velcro condition where you stick to yourselves, because not only will we have the heat, but a noticeable increase in the humidity.
There is the risk of a rogue thunderstorm this afternoon, and those heat advisories will continue right through Friday. At the White House this afternoon, President Trump is meeting with teachers and administrators about the prospects of reopening school in the COVID-19 era. Will there be school come September? Big question mark there. Mr. Trump suggesting that older teachers continue to stay away. Coronavirus cases are on the rise in 40 states now. Nearly half of all the new infections are in just two states, Florida and California. Reporter Carter Evans says mask wearing is a must in L.A. County.
They're taking this very seriously in Santa Monica. In fact, if you're caught not wearing a mask in public, police can give you a ticket for $100, and businesses can be fined $500.
So far, President Trump has resisted calls for a nationwide mask-wearing mandate. One of the nation's top disease experts is warning, do not get complacent.
We are still knee-deep in the first wave of this.
Dr. Anthony Fauci with the National Institutes of Health, concerned about the continued rise in caseloads in the South and the West.
Within a period of a week and a half, we've almost doubled the number of cases.
Scientists, meantime, are starting to rethink how COVID-19 is spread.
The risk goes beyond 6 feet.
Dr. Don Milton wrote a letter to the WHO this week that was signed by more than 200 scientists. It expressed concern about COVID-19 going airborne.
You look at the restaurant outbreak in Guangzhou, several bus outbreaks in China, and it's clear that one person could infect people over much more than 6 feet.
Dr. Milton says COVID-19 particles remain in the air longer than previously thought. A new study shows hydroxychloroquine helps people survive the virus. Researchers in Detroit found 13% fewer deaths in coronavirus patients who were given that drug.
If the results of the Detroit study are confirmed in later studies, President Trump was absolutely right that hydroxychloroquine can save lives.
White House advisor Peter Navarro, the FDA approving a new coronavirus test that can show results in just 15 minutes. It'll be used at more than 25,000 hospitals nationwide. The company behind the test calls it a game changer for healthcare workers and COVID patients. In other news today, city leaders condemning the spate of violence over the 4th of July holiday in places like Atlanta, New York City, and Chicago.
We cannot allow this to be normalized. We cannot get used to hearing about children being gunned down.
In Chicago, a 7-year-old was shot and killed while playing outside her grandma's home. One suspect in custody. Police are searching for 3 more.
Take some ownership in the decisions you made. Come on in. Turn yourself in. And admit that you killed a 7-year-old child.
Over a 4-day period last week in the Windy City, nearly 90 people were shot. Conservative radio talk show host Dan Bongino.
Everybody keeps asking, when is enough enough? When people start voting different. That's the only answer to that question. When people say, now's enough, today's enough, no more of this tomorrow, I'm voting for different people.
Georgia's governor declaring a state of emergency due to all the shootings there. He has activated the National Guard. Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms.
These aren't police officers shooting people on the streets of Atlanta. These are members of the community shooting each other. Enough is enough.
In New York City, there's been a 130% surge in the violence since early June. Mayor Bill de Blasio is blaming COVID-19.
Turning into warmer and warmer weather. And we're feeling the effects of people being cooped up for months. And the economy obviously has not restarted to anywhere the extent we need it to. So there's a lot less for people to do. We have a real problem here.
New York recently voted to gut funding for the NYPD to the tune of $1 billion. Police Commissioner Dermot Shea.
You heard me say a storm was coming, and we're in the middle of it right now, and we're in a perfect storm of sorts, and it's extremely frustrating. What we need is support. And that's in short supply.
Shea says efforts to delegitimize the police will only lead to more lawlessness. Country music legend Charlie Daniels has died.
If you win, you get the shiny pedal, way to go. If you lose, the devil gets your soul.
Unlike him, Daniels suffering a fatal stroke yesterday. Fans reacting to his death in his hometown of Mount Juliet, Tennessee.
He's a true patriot. He's helped out with our military for as long as I can remember.
An American icon. I mean, there's no question that he's going to be remembered. I mean, his legacy is amazing and forever.
Dolly Parton tweeted, "The devil went down to Georgia, but Charlie went straight to heaven." Charlie Daniels was 83. It is the single largest deal in sports history.
Mahomes looks that way. Now will fire. That hit his man.
Quarterback Patrick Mahomes has just agreed to a 10-year extension with the Kansas City Chiefs that'll pay him $503 million over the next 12 years. Amazing. Jamie Eisenberg is with CBS Sports.
I just put a football in each of my three kids' hands and said, go out and throw against the wall as hard as you can and see if you can become the next billion-dollar quarterback.
Mahomes' contract eclipses the previous record in professional sports. That was set by baseball's Mike Trout, who inked a 12-year, $426 million deal with the L.A. Angels. Still to come on the Noon Report for Tuesday, Wolf says, get used to the mask. New York responds to nursing home deaths and lightning strikes Bradford County.
Good afternoon. Well, the heat is on today and for this week. I've got the numbers, your forecast coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. Checking the headlines where you live. Two men killed, two others injured after being struck by a bolt of lightning. It happened yesterday afternoon in Bradford County, Pennsylvania.
The two individuals that passed away are from out of the area, believed to live in southern Pennsylvania.
That's Tom Carman. He is the Bradford County coroner.
The other two were transported by ground to Robert Packer Hospital in Sear.
The men were hit by lightning in the town of Granville, that's near Troy, PA, while standing in an open field underneath a wooden tree stand. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo's added three more states, Delaware, Kansas, and Oklahoma, to the list of states that will require a 14-day quarantine. And that brings to 19 now the total number of states affected by New York's travel advisory. New York's just released a report on COVID-19 deaths inside nursing homes. Health Secretary Dr. Howard Zucker.
When the rise in deaths in the nursing homes happened, you know, I asked myself as the public health leader, what happened? And it's important to know why, because it matters. It matters to bring closure to families, all those families.
New York released more than 6,300 COVID-19 patients into nursing homes at the height of the pandemic in March. By May, the governor had reversed that policy, and over that time, 6,400 people died in nursing homes. But Dr. Zucker says the governor is not to blame.
Admission policies were not a significant factor in nursing home fatalities, and data suggests that nursing home quality is not a factor in mortality from COVID. So what happened? How did COVID-19 enter the nursing home?
Zucker contends the virus spread throughout the nursing homes was propelled by more than 20,000 infected workers, many of whom kept working unaware that they were infected. New York Congressman Tom Reed says Governor Cuomo is attempting to sidestep accountability for nursing home deaths. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf says an expanded mask-wearing mandate signed by his health secretary last week could be in place until there is a coronavirus vaccine.
Models out there suggest that states where people wear masks, the infection rate is actually lower. So who knows when this is going to end. we probably ought to be thinking about this just to keep each other safe.
The governor says he is concerned about new breakouts of the virus in the aftermath of the 4th of July holiday. Pennsylvania Congressman Glenn Thompson says, unfortunately, mask wearing has become all too political.
There's obviously a place for masks. I think that the science is pretty clear with that. But that doesn't mean you need to wear them all the time. The way the governor is talking about this, he wants you, when you step outside your front door, to put a mask on. That's just ridiculous. It's not functional. I think we just proceed with common sense, with caution, and quite frankly, with courage.
The mask-wearing mandate continues to be a contentious conversation in the coronavirus era.
If you don't want to wear a mask, you shouldn't have to. It's a free country. Everyone has the right to do as they please.
I don't get to walk into a retail store and light up a cigarette out of my desire to smoke indoors. I shouldn't be able to walk into a retail store not wearing a mask.
There were 450 confirmed COVID cases yesterday in the Commonwealth, and that is the lowest one-day total since mid-June. COVID concerns has canceled the Great New York State Fair. Not going to happen this summer, says Fair Director Troy Waffner in Syracuse.
I liken it to my mom dying. You know, I understood why she died. She was in poor health, but I was still sad. And the fair is the same way. I understand the reason behind it. Doesn't mean we're not sad, because this is what we really spend 12 or 14 or 18 months a year planning, is to come to this big crescendo of the New York State Fair.
Waffner was anticipating more than 1.5 million people at the fairgrounds this year. Those with tickets will be refunded, or they can use them next year. Activists are calling it an act of hate, the destruction of a fiberglass Frederick Douglass statue in Rochester, New York.
It's sickening, is the only thing I could say. It's really disheartening.
Black activist Carvin Eisen says the statue of the Civil War era abolitionist was destroyed on the 168th anniversary of Douglass's famous speech, "What to the Slave Was the 4th of July?" Eisen has the following message for those responsible for the statue's demise.
They can knock down every single one of them. They can destroy them. They can desecrate them. They can do what they want. But it will never diminish the values that Frederick Douglass stood for. So they didn't win, and they will never win.
The Frederick Douglass statue was later found near the Genesee River. Still no arrests made. A New York State police cruiser struck by a big rig on Interstate 86 in Allegheny County this morning. The cop had stopped to assist with a disabled camper on the shoulder of the road in the town of Almond. That officer had to be taken to Jones Memorial Hospital in Wellsville. No major injuries were told. The driver of the tractor trailer was given multiple tickets. A bill before the New York State Senate seeks to force NYPD officers to carry personal liability insurance in order to cover lawsuits that are filed against them. Right now, cops who are sued get support from the taxpayers. This bill would require officers pay an increase in premiums for payouts connected to police wrongdoing. It's one of a series of new police reform bills being considered in Albany. Sports is next, the 2-Minute Drill. Here's Sonny Delphia.
Thank you, Bob. Yeah, play ball. Major League Baseball's 2020 schedule is out. The New York Yankees will help kick things off on opening day. They visit the World Series champion Washington Nationals, part of a Major League Baseball doubleheader, Thursday, July 23rd, followed by the Giants and the Dodgers. The other 26 clubs start the 24th. Teams will play division opponents 10 times each and 20 interleague games against the opposite geographic division. The Mets will be at home opening day against the Braves at Citi Field. The Pirates will open up on the road at the Cardinals, that's St. Louis, for a 3-game set starting on July 24th. In Philadelphia, the Phillies will open the shortened season at home against the Miami Marlins. Cleveland hosting the Kansas City Royals at Progressive Field. That's for players that are playing. Some are sitting out this season, like Nick Markakis. He says, after talking to Freddie Freeman, who tested positive for the virus, it's just not worth it.
I think the decision that I'm making to sit out this year and be with my family, it makes it tough, but I think that's the right decision for myself and my family.
We heard earlier that pitcher David Price also sitting out, forfeiting $12 million. But one of the league's best players, Mike Trout, said even though his wife is pregnant, he will play unless...
You know, I got to do, obviously, baseball. I love baseball, but I got to do what's right for my family sometimes. And, you know, majority of the time, I got to do everything with for my family. And, you know, it's going to be a tough decision if something happens up down the road.
A little baseball history on this date. In 1948, the Cleveland Indians became the first major league team to sign legendary Negro League All-Star pitcher Satchel Paige. Cleveland owner Bill Veeck signed the 42-year-old Paige to a $40,000 three-month contract, making Paige the first African-American pitcher in the American League. Satchel Paige would make his pitching debut July 9th and appear in 21 games, finishing the season with a record of 6-1, an ERA of 2.48, 43 strikeouts, and a World Series ring. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Delphia.
Excellent work as always. Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on the Noon Report for a Tuesday, banning TikTok. You'll meet the man who's running across Cattaraugus County. And at the end of the broadcast, we'll tell you about a dream wedding giveaway.
Will your pastor say what you want him to this Sunday? And what if he doesn't? For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. You know, pastoring's always a difficult job. Pastoring during coronavirus, however, well, that's even more unenviable. Zoom stock might be way up as the new preferred platform for corporations and schools, but there is no digital substitute for the sort of face-to-face work that pastoring requires. When to close down? That was a tough decision. When to reopen? That's even more difficult. If pastors choose to strictly adhere to state guidelines, they'll upset people. If they ignore or relax those guidelines, they'll upset others. And in addition to navigating a global pandemic, pastors must also deal with already intense and only intensifying cultural firestorms. While we all must navigate these issues of race, sexuality, and gender, criminal justice, political division, and other markers of our fallen human nature that dominate our cultural moment, pastors face expectations that many of us don't. I can't tell you how many times I've seen this phrase on social media recently. If your pastor doesn't preach about X from the pulpit this Sunday, it's time to find a new church. It's the same phrase, but the X seems to change with the headlines. Now don't get me wrong, as the true account of the human condition, the Bible has this quality to it of universal relevance, and pastors should make the connection between the timeless truths of Scripture and our particular cultural context, both in their preaching and in their leading. Still, at the same time, the very loud demands being placed today on pastors to not only hold, but to articulate our approved opinions reveals far more about us than it does about our pastors. After all, if we're confident that our pastors are called by God and are entrusted by Him to lead us into His Word and His will, well, that leaves little room for making demands on what He teaches. Also, our loud demands that a pastor talk about subject X almost always means say specifically what I want him to say about subject X. But that also means that we're not really looking for a pastor or a teacher or a leader anymore. We're looking for a parrot. The demands pastors face can range from mountains to molehills, but in too many cases, these are treated as the same. Let's bring up the most common elephant in the sanctuary today. Everyone has strong feelings about masks. I do too. But being asked to wear a mask to church by pastors who are seeking to comply with civic authorities or to protect the health of parishioners, that's not a matter of orthodoxy. This is not a sufficient cause for outrage or of making demands for our pastor's compliance. It's certainly not worth leaving a church over. Look, what is really at stake here is that we all need to foster a proper ecclesiology. That's a 50-cent word for the doctrine of the church. When we view church like we do so much of 21st century Western life as consumers, then we'll tend to see church as a place to be entertained or affirmed, either in our feelings or in our views. That, rather than a fidelity to Christ and His gospel, is what's driving so much of the entitlement that we feel and that pastors face. Every church and every Christian, of course, ought to expect and to demand that their pastors preach the true word of God with passion and with courage. We ought never allow a pastor to abuse his power or his position and exploiting any member of the congregation. At the same time, we should never demand that our pastor never disagree with us. The holy willingness of a pastor to say what's true is only matched by the holy willingness of a Christ follower to hear what they may not like. And again, don't leave church over a mask. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street.
All right, thank you, John. The heat is on. Let's take it outside. Kevin Williams. We'll be right back. right, Kevin, nice day for the pool. Thank you very much. This is the Noon Report. I'm your host, Bob Price. Here's what's going on this Tuesday afternoon, the 7th of July. President Trump is meeting with teachers and administrators at the White House today about the prospects of schools reopening come the fall. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says there's still no official decision on that. He's worried about the growing number of coronavirus cases in other states.
You now have 38 states in this country with an increasing virus rate of infection. It's only getting worse. It's not getting better.
The governor says schools should prepare for all scenarios, in-person classes, as well as the possibility of just online learning. Harvard University has just announced its plans for the new school year. Only 40% of undergrads will be allowed on campus. All classes will be taught online. What's not changing at Harvard is the price tag of tuition, nearly $50,000 for 1 year. Way down south, coronavirus cases continue to enact a heavy toll on the state of Florida.
The news is not particularly good.
That is the mayor of Miami, Francis Suarez. Hospitalizations here have more than doubled in the last 2 weeks. Now gyms, party venues, banquet halls, and short-term vacation rentals are closed. Restaurants are being forced to return to outdoor service only.
Correspondent David Begno in Miami. Getting your temperature checked is now part of many of our daily routines, but according to one health expert, that might not always be the most accurate way to determine whether you have COVID-19. A loss of smell or a lack of smell might be a stronger indicator of the presence of the virus, says Dr. Emily Volk with the College of American Pathologists.
That was a pretty strong single predictor of being infected. In fact, this study suggested it was the strongest single predictor of being infected.
Two-thirds of all coronavirus patients say they lost their sense of smell. White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany is scolding the media for not asking her questions at her daily press briefing about the spate of deadly shootings that happened over the 4th of July holiday.
I'm a little dismayed that I didn't receive one question on the deaths that we got in this country this weekend. I didn't receive one question about New York City shootings doubling for the third straight week. Not one question. I didn't receive one question about five children who were killed.
Over a four-day period last week, nearly 90 people were shot in the city of Chicago. The governor of Georgia has declared a state of emergency and activated the National Guard due to the uptick in violence. It's primary day in New Jersey. We get a preview from Scott Pringle.
Well, residents have the option of voting with a mail-in ballot because of the coronavirus pandemic or going to the polls. Democratic U.S. Senator Cory Booker is being challenged by Democrat Lawrence Ham in South Jersey. Congressman Jeff Van Drew, he's trying to retain his seat after switching from the Democrat to the Republican Party. Former George W. Bush speechwriter Bob Patterson is challenging Van Drew, while three people are running for his seat on the Democratic side. Scott Pringle, New Jersey.
Thank you, Scott. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says the U.S. is considering banning the short-form video app known as TikTok. It's owned by a company based in China.
With respect to Chinese apps on people's cell phones, I can assure you the United States will get this one right too, Laura. I don't want to get out in front of the president, but it's something we're looking at.
Pompeo on The Angle with Laura Ingraham on Fox News last night. Overnight, TikTok said it would stop operating in Hong Kong because of a new Chinese national security law there. TikTok also says it does not want to censor content or turn data over to the communist regime in Beijing. Another Confederate statue has come down from its perch in Virginia. Work crews in Richmond have removed the 1907 likeness of Confederate General Jeb Stuart along Monument Avenue in the Virginia Capitol. Statues of Stonewall Jackson and Jefferson Davis have also been erased from public view in Richmond. We're coming up on 25 past the hour. You're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life. welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes on Family Life. I'm your host, Bill Price. Our guest this week, Bradley Poole from Salamanca, New York. He's halfway through his 266-mile run through every single town in Cattaraugus County. You're going out for a little jog.
Yeah, just a little light jog.
So
266 miles through every town in Cattaraugus County.
Going through every single town, is there a reason for that, Bradley?
So I'm doing this run to raise awareness and money for cystic fibrosis, which is a disease I live with. And because CF gets no government funding, the only way to develop better life prolonging medications is through donations.
Yeah, you know this better than most people, this disease, and you're kind of a miracle story yourself. You shouldn't, according to your doctors, you shouldn't be alive today, right?
That's correct. They told my parents when I was born that I'd be lucky to see 18, but due to advancements in medicine, that life expectancy has slowly kept going up.
Yeah.
It was just 37 years, not too long ago, like 5 years ago maybe, and they just bumped it up to 40.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a couple years ago.
Yeah. So lots of ways to raise money for causes. And why did you pick running?
So I started running 3 years ago. I caught a bad cold. I was in the hospital for a week. And before running, I was just like, I wasn't doing any type of cardio stuff at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I went in the hospital. I told myself when I get out, I'm going to start adding more cardio into my routine just to help the lungs out. And
yeah.
I decided on, you know, trying to run, mm-hmm. see how that would go. I started running, and then I did my first race, which was a half marathon. And then from that point on, I just got addicted to it, kept going with it.
Sure, yeah, it is addicting. I do about 6 miles a day. You're going to be doing, 42 miles a day?
Yep, 42 miles a day for 6 days, and then on the last day, it's going to be 14.
So what's the training been like? I mean, this is pretty intense stuff.
Yeah, I've been training since last September. So I got a coach. His name's Mark Wilson out of Casadega. He's been working with me for almost 10 months now.
You're listening to Hometown Heroes on Family Life. Our guest this week is Bradley Poole from Salamanca, New York, running through every single town in Cattaraugus County, New York, to raise money and raise awareness for the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, a disease you have lived through. You're a miracle, Bradley, and we understand you've already raised a bunch of money, correct?
Yep, I raised close to $15,000 so far. My goal is to raise $100,000.
When you run these distances, it's as much of a mental thing as it is a physical one, right?
That's correct. Running is pretty much 90% mental, 10% physical. It's a lot of mental toughness. Your body's going to get tired, but you just got to keep pushing through and telling yourself you can get through it, not giving up, and just keep working through the pain and getting it done.
Folks can probably watch you as you run through these towns, right?
Yep. Yeah, I got my Facebook page up, and on there I got maps and stuff on there that people can see what towns and roads I'll be going through. I'll be doing Facebook Live throughout the event and drink lots of fluids, get hydrated.
How long will it take you to run 42 miles?
So I'm going to shoot for like a 10 to 11 minute pace, which will take about 7-8 hours.
8 hours of running.
We're starting at 5 a.m. every day.
Yeah.
And the goal is to be done by 12, 1 o'clock.
Kind of beat the heat of the day.
Beat the heat.
Yep. And then you'll just kind of camp out in wherever you end and then pick up from there the next day, or how's it going to work?
So I'm going to get picked up for wherever I leave off, and then I'll get driven back out the next day to where I left off and pick up again from there.
And you'll finish where?
I'm going to finish in Ellicottville.
All right. Bradley Poole, we wish you all the best, and stay safe. What a neat story. What a great cause.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
That's Bradley Poole from Salamanca, New York, this week's Hometown Hero. Join us next week as we search for your home, your town, your hero. It's Hometown Heroes on Family Life.
Love that feature. Thank you very much, Bill. Hometown Heroes comes your way every Tuesday during the Noon Report. You can catch it online anytime. Just go to fln.org/podcast. And coming up, we're going to tell you how you can win a dream wedding.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Well, the heat is on this week. I think everybody knows that by now, but the The difference moving forward, more humidity, so it's going to become sultry. It's that uggy, muggy air that will wear for the rest of the week, and that humidity will eventually brew some thunderstorms for some. For today, most of us are rain-free. It will be sunny to partly cloudy, hot and humid this afternoon, but there'll be a couple of rogue thunderstorms from the Finger Lakes south into central and eastern Pennsylvania. High temperatures, 80s and low 90s for most. And then tonight, down to about 70, partly cloudy. Tomorrow, a steamy day. Sun and clouds, a couple of afternoon thunderstorms, 80s and low 90s. And we're well in the 90s on Thursday with sunshine. It'll be cooler, though, near the shores of Lake Erie in Ontario.
All right, Kevin, thank you. Finally at noon, when you are on the front lines of the coronavirus pandemic, your personal life tends to fall by the wayside. And that includes milestone moments, such as weddings. But for one lucky couple, it'll be worth the wait.
This wedding is everything. It is a full wedding.
The Dream Wedding Giveaway comes in a time where there aren't many dream moments.
24 Atlanta area vendors are teaming up to throw a dream wedding worth $75,000. That will be some wedding, folks. It'll cover all your costs, from catering to rings, even flowers. The effort's the brainchild of Courtney Larimore, who credits a nurse with saving the life of her young son.
We don't know who that nurse was. We just want to pay it forward, and that's why we're giving away a wedding to an essential worker.
Everyone deserves it, so it's going to be this hard fight to pick. All right, now who gets this dream wedding?
Any essential worker can apply for the dream wedding, from nurses to truck drivers to first responders. If you had to press pause on your wedding plans, these vendors want to hear from you. The deadline to apply, July 17th. The wedding date is set in stone. If you don't mind a winter wedding, it's January 17th. But the $75,000 wedding can be yours. That's the world we live in. Tuesday, July 7th. I'm Bob Price. Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.